Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hey, Swanee. It's Andy Bunker here from the Midday Show with Andy and Randy. Thanks for listening to us every weekday from 10 to 2 on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's time to talk all things Dirty Birds. It's Falcons Flyover. John Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Halfway home on a Tuesday evening, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back at it on the John Chuckery Show. 404-741-0929. That, of course, our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you want to leave us a comment there. We're asking you to download the Radio.com app because, well, we know you want to listen to the station in this particular show, but you're not in your vehicle as much as what you used to be, so how do I do it? Simple. Radio.com app. You have a device, right? Take it and download it. Put it on a smartphone, a Alexa speakers, a tablet, a Walkman, a Sega Genesis, a Commodore 64, an Intellivision, Game Boy. I don't know what your device is. Just download it onto something to be able to catch us when you're on the go. Social media is all at 929 The Game. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Follow us on the platforms there. As always, the best way to be a part of the show, it's through my personal Twitter handle. Reach me. Follow me at JMCH. 316 at JMCH 316. That, of course, is all of your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. Jarvis has the week off, taking a little staycation as it is a holiday week. So Dylan is hanging out with us this week, and we'll be asking the questions later on for Rank'em as it is a Tuesday night. I will be back with you after tonight. I'll be back with you on Friday evening. Back with you Friday, and I'll be with you on college football Saturday as well. But this is our nightly look at all things Atlanta Falcons. So Adam Schefter had a story talking about some of the candidates that are supposedly in the mix for the GM position of the Atlanta Falcons. Here's what he says his list includes. Former Texans GM Rick Smith, Bears Assistant Director of Personnel Champ Kelly, Rams Director of College Scouting Brad Holmes, and former Raiders GM Reggie McKenzie, among others. It says, while the Falcons clearly are moving in the direction to fill their GM opening, team official also told ESPN that they're still early in the process and in the research stages of, quote-unquote, a wide field of candidates before we look at the interview stage. We want to do it right versus do it fast. And obviously they have plenty of time with all of that. It says there are candidates that have piqued Atlanta's interest, including Smith, who drafted Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, and J.J. Watt in Houston before parting ways with the organization. Okay, here, let me put it this way, and that's nice and that's cute. And by the way, the Texans haven't won more than the Atlanta Falcons, so it's great to have Watt and Hopkins and all those guys. Okay, they didn't do anything with those guys. So let me put it this way. I, in my search of coach, GM, whatever, if your title is, if you have in your bio former GM or former head coach, I don't want you. That's just me. I'm not interested in former GMs. I'm not interested in former head coaches. I'm ready to get a completely fresh and new set of eyes into how to do things in the NFL for this franchise. That's just me. You may be enamored with Reggie McKenzie or Rick Smith or whatever. I'm not. If you're a former GM or you're a former coach, then you've already been hired to be fired, and now you're on another gig to go. I'm not for it. Sorry, that's just me. I may be wrong. I may be missing out on some really good candidates. Okay, now look, if you said to me, Pete Carroll's coming to coach here, okay. If you said to me maybe Bill Belichick is coming to do personnel, okay. I might be into that. Think they're coming? Any chance you think that they're coming right now over here? No? Oh, okay. So that former, you know, Patriots and Jets coach Bill Belichick is coming to be kind of GM coach. Okay, I'll be that. Former Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, former Saints coach Sean Payton is coming. Okay, I'd be in for one of those. What's the chance you suppose they're coming? If you said zero, that's still too high. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not in the business of, I want a former Raiders GM. I want a former Texans GM. Hell, the Texans have underachieved more than the Falcons. They've underachieved more than what this franchise has. Even with Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins. It was not even there anymore. So, look, that's just me. That's my personal preference is nobody that, like I said, is like former GM or this, that, and the other. All right, let's get to some audio. Let's start with, we got Alex Mack as well, but let's start with the offensive coordinator. This is what we didn't get a chance to get to yesterday. We heard from the head coach, and let's hear from the offensive coordinator. Here's Dirk Cutter talking about the game over the weekend and how our offense didn't bail us out.
The first time in a long time our pass game hasn't been able to bail us out. I mean, we couldn't get anything going. The play passes weren't there. The quick game wasn't working. The keepers, the bootleg game wasn't there. So, you know, we've seen this movie before. When we get into a game where we're relying too much on drop back, actually our no huddle drop back was probably the best thing we did all night, when we just went fast and we were in the 2x2 set, and in essence we're running our 2-minute offense mixed in there. That's probably the best thing we did, and we just can't survive like that.
Okay, can I ask a dumb question? Is he the offensive coordinator? Is he doing this job for free? Is this a volunteer position? You know, like how you can, I don't know what, you want to go do some stuff for the Salvation Army this Christmas season, right? You can go volunteer your services to go help them out or something, right? Or Goodwill. Okay. Is Dirk Cutter doing this on a volunteer basis? Because that's how, that, because otherwise, what the hell is he our offensive coordinator for? Has he been the manager or the front office personnel for the Braves recently?
Ran into a buzzsaw.
By the way, half the stuff he talked about, I don't remember them doing. How many screens and bubble screens and things like that did you see? So, if the Saints are doing something, we just have no answer. He can't get out of here fast enough. I have no idea. So, somebody coaches against us. Well, you know, we're under a buzzsaw. I expect to see Dirk Cutter as the Braves' third base coach next year, because he fits right in over there. Oh, Lord. Here's Dirk Cutter talking about we were one-dimensional in the second half.
So the whole second half, I felt like we were too one-dimensional, but, you know, once you get behind, it's hard, and we just couldn't get anything going. I mean, we couldn't get anything going. So I thought the first half we were not one. I didn't think that was our issue in the first half, being one-dimensional. We just, you know, we moved the ball okay. We just couldn't finish with touchdowns.
Until 12:41 of the fourth quarter, they were never down more than one score. What the hell is he talking about? Oh, we just got down. Okay, you were down one score until early in the fourth quarter. It's not like you didn't have an entire quarter and a few minutes of the fourth quarter to not be one-dimensional. So you were trying to rally back in the third quarter? It was only a 10-9 game at the half. I mean, what the hell is he talking about? What? Is this a rib? Is this a ruse? I mean, seriously, who's he think he's fooling? Do these guys have any idea about the game management, about how it goes on? Here's Dirk Cutter on what he's seeing from the Raiders.
They are a zone-oriented four-down front team. They started the season maybe giving up a lot of yardage rushing, but the last month of the season they're playing much faster on defense, and I think they're, you know, when you've played 10 games into the season, your stats tell one story, but how they're really playing the last month, I think they're playing much better than their stats indicate, and the fact that they, you know, they beat Kansas City once and just about beat them again last night, I think that shows how much better they're playing on defense.
What difference does it make? If they dictate anything to us, we don't have an answer. What difference does it make? What difference does it make if they play good defense, bad defense? Hell, we're not going to adjust. We're not going to out-coach them. We're not going to out-scheme them. You know, we got to hope, like we always do, that we can line up our personnel on the field and we can find a mismatch with our personnel. Not we can scheme guys open and call the right play. We have to make sure that we get personnel on the field that can outmatch them on the personnel side. That's it. It's another game where that's what we got to hope for. Let's hope whatever defensive back lines up against whatever guys just can't cover the guy. Not because we schemed or lined it, just because hope for the best. Oh, Lord. Here's Alex Mack talking about how they think they can have success against the Saints defense in a few weeks.
There was definitely a lot of plays to be made and a lot of meat still on the bone. I think that goes hand in hand with executing when you need to execute. When it's time to make a play, you have to step up, make a play, and be a little tighter. And that just takes all 11 guys on the field really focusing in on the details and just performing better.
Okay, so who's going to coach these guys up in a few weeks to get that to happen? Who's going to coach these guys up to where, okay, we see some things we can exploit, let's go after it. Whose job's that going to be? Matt? Dan? Dan Reeves? Whose job's that going to be? This coaching staff? Here's Alex Mack talking about, let's skip down just a little bit. Let's skip down to number 7. Here's Alex Mack talking about the Saints and what they did well.
They did a good job of pressuring. They were able to kind of keep the pressure on. They didn't do too many different things. They just did the things they did very well.
What they did well was get coached. That's what they do well. That's what I keep going back to. If you have a guy who gives you an advantage on Sunday, you don't have to out-personnel everybody. You don't have to out-quarterback and wide receiver everybody on the field with your Madden rating. You can take a backup gimmick quarterback and win because your coach will play to your strengths and put you in a position to succeed. We don't know what that's like here. I don't even know when the last time I felt like that. Lord. Ay. I mean, it's just maddening when you hear these guys. We have no answers when somebody comes at us. None. This season can't get over soon enough. All right, when we get back, that's life. Top 10 sitcoms, funny TV shows, however you want to describe it, of all time. And I'll tell you why coming up next as well. Chuck with Show, hanging out with you here on this Tuesday evening. Sports Radio 910 The Game and on the Radio.com app.
What up, Snailville?
Yeah.
It's Hugh Douglas from The Morning Show. Listen to Will Carroll, injury expert, every Thursday at 9:20 with John Fricke and Hugh Douglas on 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the John Chuckery Show. 9:21 on a Tuesday evening. You know what time it is.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say.
404-741-0929. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of this show. Radio.com app is how you catch us when you're on the go. Social media is at 929thegame. Hit me up at JMCH316 on the Twitter machine. We'll get to our top 10 here in just a second. Boy, listen, with all the with the vaccine moving right along, change of administration, here's what I can say. The market has responded very, very well. And all of the, especially like the things like, for instance, the Carnival is starting to roll back up. You know, my big three, Boeing, Carnival, and Delta. Delta's up over $40 a share now. I'm almost up. I'm up about 90% now on Delta. I'm closing in very quickly. I've already having doubled my money on Delta. And some of my Delta shares I have doubled my money on. Some of those shares I got for, I think, right at 20 or something like that. Carnival, I have several that I've more than doubled my money on. Boeing, that's I think it closed at about 215 today. So the vaccine is really helping some of those stocks out. And the other thing that there's a lot of anticipation with, and I've been talking about this for a few weeks now, is the two big cannabis companies. You know, Aurora Cannabis and the one that I have, Cronus. There's a lot of thought that with Biden and Kamala Harris coming in, that they are going to be much more open to the idea of, you know, legalizing marijuana and being less stringent on it. And that stock has really kind of started to take off for me. It really for most of the year has just really kind of stalled and lagged. And there was a lot of reports that said that watch for cannabis stocks at the end of the year, that may be one of those things to invest in. So, you know, I've kind of held on to it. It's really not done much of anything for me. But now over the last about month, maybe not even, it's been really good. And my other one, man, I can't say enough about EVRI, man. Listen, you know, gambling devices and things like that. You know, that's what EVRI is in. They're in almost 80% of all of the, like, video gambling machines and stuff like that. I'm now up almost about 170% on that. So that one has been really good for me. That one really kind of took off. And U.S. Foods has been another one that's been really solid of late. So nothing but good news. Always good to see tons of green when you're on the market. So, was reading this story about Dave Chappelle. He Netflix is removing his show off of the Dave Chappelle Show off of their platforms, and he because he's working with Netflix, they decided to honor this and work with him on it, as Viacom is putting out his show without it. Now, what Dave Chappelle is mad at is Viacom owns the show, and they're putting it out on different platforms, but Chappelle's making no money for it. But the problem is, that's the deal that he signed for it. I understand the intellectual property part of it, but at the same time, you know, that's the deal that he signed with it. And he says, well, even he says about it, and because he got Netflix to pull the show off. He says, when I left that show, I never got paid. They didn't have to pay me because I signed the contract. But is that right? I found out these people were streaming my work and they never had to ask me, or they never had to tell me. Perfectly legal because I signed the contract, but is that right? I didn't think so either. That's why I like working for Netflix. I like working for Netflix because with all those bad things happening to me, that company didn't even exist. And when I found out that they were streaming Chappelle's show, I was furious. How could they not? How could they not know? So you know what I did? I called them and I told them that this makes me feel bad, and you want to know what they did? They agreed that they would take it off their platform so I could feel better. That's why I blank with Netflix. And this is on an Instagram post. I understand Dave Chappelle's frustration about the creative, but he signed the contract. And that's what so many of these artists get into, is that they agree to all this stuff and won't keep their intellectual property to it, and they suffer for it. You know, the Beatles didn't understand about publishing and things like that, and so they didn't own a lot of their early stuff. And because of it, you know, it got sold and moved around, and, you know, and then, you know, of course, Michael Jackson ended up with the Beatles catalog. And, I mean, you know, when you sign those deals when you're young because you need the money, you know, you give control over. So I get what Chappelle is saying, and good for Netflix for working with them. But Viacom doesn't owe him anything. If they paid him and he signed the deal, then that's what you get for it. That's what this is, unfortunately. Now, with that, and we had a discussion about MASH the other night on the show, I think on Friday night with Jarvis. With that being said, top 10 favorite sitcoms or comedy shows of all time, our favorites for us. Dylan, the floor is yours, and I'm sure this is going to be very much an age thing when we get to it.
Now, I don't think this is going to be too different in age, because I respect the OG shows, and I've seen some of the OG shows, so we'll start with this. Friends is on the list for me. Friends is just iconic. I've seen Friends. How can you not respect Friends? It's got to be on the top 10. How I Met Your Mother, I enjoyed that one. Neil Patrick Harris was very funny on that show. Good storyline, too. You know, not only did it have its funny moments, it was a good sitcom. Also had a, you know, good underlying story. Full House. I grew up watching Full House, man. Full House was my show.
My daughter loves Full House. That's one of her. That's always been one of her favorite shows.
Yeah, I mean, was it the Olsen twins are on that? Was it? Yeah, the Olsen twins. I mean, just when they were little, especially when they were little, man, they were hilarious. Family Matters, obviously Steve Urkel. Then I do that. You know, that was hilarious. The Office. That's a more of a younger one. Is on my top 10. Hilarious. Parks and Recreation, a kind of a branch off from The Office, is on there for me. Seinfeld. I mean, how can you not have Seinfeld on there? I mean, it's a classic. I've seen it. You got to have Seinfeld on there. That 70s show, and then one other one I'm going to mention here, taught me a lot about life and a little bit about adulthood and, you know, teenagerisms and things of that nature. Taught a young deal a lot of those things. The Simpsons. I love The Simpsons, even though, you know, animated, it's got to be on there. And Family Guy is one of my personal favorites. Another show that, you know, taught me a lot of things that I probably shouldn't have known growing up. But that's my top 10.
You know, Family Guy is one of my honorable mentions. Sometimes it's funny. Sometimes I think it's a little over the top. How many do you think we had similar?
I'm going to say 5.
None.
Wow.
And this is
zero?
Where I said. So where I said, let me put it this way. I think Friends is one of the most overrated shows of all time. I never understood. Never enjoyed it. Never thought it was funny. Did not enjoy it. I like Seinfeld. I like it. I enjoy it. I don't think it's one of my 10 favorites. You know, it's probably like Family Guy. It's honorable mention. It's right outside of it. I respect the show. And there are some really funny things on it. I've said all the time, Jerry Seinfeld to me is way funnier on that show than his stand-up. I think Jerry Seinfeld's stand-up, when I watched his old stand-up, I thought his stand-up was dreadful. Like, I thought and those stupid segments they would do at the beginning of his, like, where he'd be like in the club, they're stupid. Like, that's the least funny thing, is him doing stand-up. Dreadful out there. So this is my top 10, and this is very much an age thing, and it's because I was a kid at a much different time and stuff like that. But I go real old school. I've got In Living Color on there. One of my absolute favorite shows. Just brilliant for a short period of time, but just brilliant. Married with Children, I have. The Cosby Show, The Jeffersons, Benson, and I'll bet you, how many shows have I named so far that you've never heard of?
Just one. I haven't heard of The Bensons, but I heard The Cosby Show, Jeffersons, all that good stuff.
All right, Benson was a spinoff of Soap. Robert Guillaume played the butler in Soap, and Robert Guillaume died a couple years ago. And Benson was a show about, he was lieutenant governor, I think, or something like that. Very funny. Very funny cast with that. Very underrated show. I've got Cheers on my list. I think Cheers did a lot of good stuff for a long time. And then kind of the, you know, top four. Here's a show you've not heard of, Barney Miller. Familiar with Barney Miller at all? Have you ever heard of that show?
Nope.
Okay. The great Abe Vigoda, Jack Sue, that cast with Fish and Jack Sue and those guys, oh, it's to me, it's hilarious. I for that time and everything, I think it's a hilarious show. That's a real old school. Barney Miller is he's a police detective. It's the show is set in the New York police detective or whatever. I can't even describe it accurately or whatever like that. And then probably my top three, I guess, if you will. Night Court. You ever heard of Night Court?
Nope.
Okay. That's a show from the 1980s. John Larroquette was tremendous. In fact, John Larroquette won like two or three Emmys playing Dan Fielding in that show. That cast is hilarious. One of my absolute favorite shows. I had a huge crush, huge celebrity crush on Marky Post. So I was very much. She was on two shows, The Fall Guy and on Night Court. So that's one of my favorites. And then my top two, and I've said this before, the first two or three years of MASH, I think, is some of the best TV ever done. I know we had this debate on Friday night about the fact that there were a bunch of people that did not like MASH, but I'm telling you, MASH in the first two or three years, I guess it is, really it's the Henry Blake, the Frank Burns, the Trapper John. It's those really early shows that are just brilliant. Now, as that show went along and Alan Alda started doing more directing and stuff like that, it got a lot more like political and things like that and trying to put messages out there and things like that. But if you talk about just pure comedy, those first couple of years of MASH are absolutely brilliant and amazing. But it really did become a kind of political show. And the final episode of MASH is still like the most watched like regular TV show of all time, like non-Super Bowl show of all time. And then finally, my favorite comedy of all time, Sanford and Son. I'm sure you've heard of Sanford and Son.
Yeah.
With the theme song written and produced by the great Quincy Jones for it. Quincy did the theme song to it. Sanford and Son is just brilliant. I mean, Red Fox is just brilliant in that role. That's one of those shows that you couldn't make today, but he is brilliant in that role as Fred Sanford. And those crazy lines that he'd come up with, like, Dylan, what do you call it when you mix Swiss cheese with guacamole? What do you call that?
I have no idea.
Holy moly. Or he'd be like, he'd serve a drink and be like, oh, what's this? He's like, I mixed in some champagne and some Ripple. And he goes, I call it Champipple. It's just great stuff. It's so ridiculous, but it's so great. The cast is great. Julio, Grady. I mean, all those guys are just, you know, obviously, what's his name? His sister, the woman that plays his sister. Why am I? Aunt Esther. That whole cast is great in that. So that's our list. If you've got something you want to add to it, hit us up on the text line. Hit us up on our Twitter page. Your favorite comedies of all time. When we get back, DJ Shockley, what was it, Middays that he was on, Dylan, earlier today, talking some Georgia football with the guys. We'll hear what he had to say next. Chuck Michaud hanging out with you on this Tuesday evening. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and on the radio.com app.
Nighttime is the right time to talk sports.
That's a euphemism, right?
It's John Sugary and more of the Nightcap.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Back with you on the John Sugary Show. Hanging on this Tuesday evening. Head to the top of the hour, we will get to a college football roundup. Look back at the top 25 playoff poll that was released tonight. First rankings from the College Football Playoff Committee put out this evening. No real surprises, not too much. We'll kind of talk about some of the pathways and things like that that are out there. 404-741-0929, Solomon Brothers Diamond Text Line to be a part of the show. Radio.com app is how you catch us when you are on the go. Social media is at 929 The Game. Hit me up at JMCH316. Hawks got good news as the Sacramento Kings have decided not to pick up the option on Bogdan Bogdanovic. So they've declined to match the 4-year, $72 million offer sheet for him. So there you go. He will be a Hawk. So safe to say that that's it for the Atlanta Hawks, because I think they're actually one player over. They signed their the second draft pick, the kid that they drafted at 50, signed him to a that two-way contract where he can play as many as 50 games with the Hawks, and then the rest he plays in G League. So they I think that they are one over on their roster thus far. So it's pretty much a wrap for their offseason, which is fine. Listen, as we said, 4 weeks from tonight is opening night in the NBA. Not camp or not preseason or this, that, and the other. 4 weeks from tonight is game one of the 72-game NBA season. So teams had to get this done, like, at a really brisk pace. You know what I'm saying? You had to get your draft and free agency done in a matter of days to figure out, because you got to start getting all your contracts and everybody put together. You got to start getting all the organization of, okay, who's coming where and this, that, and the other, getting guys into your city and acclimated. Because camp starts in, about a week and a half? I mean, it's coming quick. It's coming real quick for the NBA. You know, we'll be just, we'll be literally just getting what teams are going to be in the college football playoff, and then the NBA 2 days later will take place. That's how quickly it's all coming out there. So, all right. Speaking of college football, by the way, earlier today, DJ Shockley joined our midday show, and the guy started off with Randy asking Shock about what his assessment of JT Daniels was.
Man, you know what, man? I thought as the game progressed, you could see the comfort level grow. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of the game, first couple of series, he took a sack that I thought he had an opportunity to throw the football away, or I thought he had a chance to just get out of there and make something happen. And you could tell he was still trying to feel out his way inside the pocket. And that was one of the things that Kirby talked to us about, was everybody wants to know why he hasn't played. Well, it's a lot of the stuff physically that they weren't sure about. And I thought as that game progressed, he grew as a QB inside the pocket and felt better and could understand the speed of the game. There were a couple of times where you could see him changing plays. You could see him getting them into good plays. You could see him one time, one of their best linebackers, Aaron Brule, comes scot-free. He makes the guy miss, climbs up in the pocket, throws a dime to Pickens, who actually drops the football. But I thought that was probably his best play of the game, moving in the pocket, throwing it, and then just being accurate. So, overall, man, I thought he played well. The numbers, obviously, are a big part of it, but I just love the way he mentally went about the game and then physically got better as the game went on.
What have you made of the conversation coming out of the game about his performance? Because we all knew if he played like this or anything near this, people were going to react by saying, well, why wasn't it sooner? Maybe could have beat Florida if he had been in the game. Maybe could have beat Alabama if he had been in the game. Do you sort of accept what we've heard from Kirby and say, yeah, all right, well, he was good, but he wasn't ready back then, and that's just kind of the deal?
I mean, absolutely. I can – because when we talked to him last week, he talked about some of the things that he was doing in practice, and as a QB, you understand what that feels like. And you don't want to throw a guy out there and he loses confidence because you know he's not ready, but you want to see what he's about. And I thought that he gave them something different in that ball game, and it took him those 2 weeks saying, hey, you're going to be the guy preparing when, you know, they didn't have the Missouri game. Now you're getting ready for an entirely different ball game, but you got 2 weeks to prepare. You got 2 weeks to put in the style of game plan you wanted. And I truly believe he probably was not ready. They said mentally he was up to par. He, you know, prepared each week like he was going to be the guy. But you can see little things in practice that showed you he wasn't ready to step in there and throw a football with guys barreling down on you, if he can move, if he couldn't move, if things were moving fast, too fast for him. So I can understand it, and I know exactly where Kirby's coming from. And I think the fact they had those couple of weeks was big for him confidence-wise, and the coach is confident-wise that he's ready to go.
Shock. Well, defensively, it just seems like, you know, Georgia, it was just that you know, dying by a thousand cuts. It seemed like it was on third. It was second and four. It seemed like every drive. And then it got to a point where it was second and four, but they're like 6 yards off. What did you think of the defensive game plan for Georgia?
Yeah, man, that's crazy you asked that, because I asked Coach Lanning and I asked Kirby the exact same question you just asked me. I said, you guys are aggressive by nature. You guys' DNA is to get after people, to play press man coverage. And they both smiling. They were shaking their head because they knew that's not the plan that they needed. And they couldn't come into this ball game and not do what everybody had did before them, which was rush three and drop eight. And it just was something different about it. He talked about all week that they had the players act as coaches, as far as they had the bat down coach. They had the zone coverage drop coach. So they had an emphasis on doing the things that hurt Mississippi State. And then on the other side, when we talked to Mississippi State, they said, we have to be good on first down, because if we get to second and third and long, then they're going to bring those exotic blitzes. We're going to be in trouble, and we're not going to be able to protect. Their offensive line hadn't been good all year. So you knew coming to this ball game, the emphasis for them was to get the ball out of their hands. And Georgia played a little soft on the back end because they were playing that, you know, rush through drop eight. At times, they brought up the corners, but at the end of the day, the quarterback did a really good job of finding that open guy to match up, and then that's why they were in that second and four, second and five range, and Georgia just had to deal with it. And I think the biggest part of it was they wanted to force them to go 10, 11, 12 play drive and see if they would be patient enough, and at times they were.
DJ Shockley joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy, as he does on Tuesdays at 11:20. Called the Georgia game on Saturday night. What would you say Georgia is best at right now, just given the entirety of the season? If you're going into a game and you're saying, I'm hanging my hat on this, this is what Georgia does best.
Well, I don't even think we have that answer. I think you look at, obviously you thought it would be the run game, but then you come in here and Mississippi State says, hey, we're not going to allow you to run the football, and you run for 8 yards in the game. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And you would think Georgia would always be able to depend on the run game, but that wasn't the instance so far. I still think Georgia is a ground-and-pound team. I still believe that that's where they want to be. But now with JT Daniels, that changes everything, because you saw exactly what this offense can look like when you have a quarterback back there that can throw the football vertically. I still believe they will get better running the football, and I still think it's a work in progress, because you haven't had the guy behind the center to get it going and be consistent. So I think we're just starting to see where this offense can possibly go with the guy back there that makes the defense a little nervous.
Shock, how good do you think Burton can be?
Who's that?
Burton. How good do you think he can be?
Yeah. You know what? He's the one guy that when we talked to the coaching staff, they pointed out has been the most consistent guy from week in and week out. He's been a guy that has improved, not only in practice, but in games, has become that guy. And when you get one-on-one opportunities, you got to make them count. And when Pickens came back, there was a little bit more coverage to him, and he had the opportunity to win on those one-on-ones, and he did. And I'm talking about making the big plays down the field. They try to get it to him in the bubble screen, the tunnel screen game. You can tell there is a concerted effort to get him the football because of his ability, and you can see it. I think this dude's going to be a dog for a while. This dude's going to make plays. He's going to make everybody else better. And he's even going to take the level of Pickens' game up a little bit more, because more balls are going to go to Burton because of that.
Yeah, and I just think we're going to be able to get a chance to see what some of these individuals can do now that you've got the quarterback that can get them the ball more consistently. I don't know if that's the answer to this or honestly, whatever you want to go with. But what do you need to see Georgia improve upon most from here on out? Just a couple games left. What are you keying on and saying, all right, I hope I really know this by the end of the season?
Well, I think it's consistency. There have been times throughout the year where there's been inconsistent play. And the defense, of course, has had their ups and downs with guys being in and out of the lineup and Mississippi State coming in with a totally different offense. Kirby said this was like preparing for the triple threat. I mean, the triple option this is something we don't see all week. So the inconsistency there you can understand. But I want to see consistency on the offensive side of the ball. I want to see JT go out and continue this kind of output, but also continue to be able to run the football. Now, it's going to be tough. Georgia fans are going to have to really kind of temper their expectations because you got South Carolina and Vandy coming up, two teams that aren't really good on the defensive side of the ball. South Carolina's got three or four opt-outs on the back end, so it could be another really good performance. But I just want to see consistency. Play the way you're supposed to play in these ball games. Don't play to the level of your competition. Play to the standard in which – everybody expects you to play it, which is scoring points, stopping people on the other side, creating turnovers, and hold on to the football. So if they can be consistent in these next two ball games and not play to the level of competition, then that goes a long way going into the offseason.
Yeah.
Hey, Shock, who's the better quarterback in the SEC right now, Mac Jones or Kyle Trask?
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's a good question, man. You know what, right now, I think I'm going to go with Kyle Trask with the way that he's been playing, his ability to get that football to so many different dudes on the perimeter and take care of the football. He's not turning it over. I think he is really dangerous, but I think it's splitting hairs right now. But if I had to take a choice, I would go with Trask.
You think we'll see Richard LeCount on the field again before the end of the season?
Man, you know what? Well, there's been some talk, and I know he said he wants to come back and finish his season out the right way. I had a chance to talk to him a little bit. He seems in the high spirits. I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to get back for maybe that last ball game of the season at home versus Vandy, senior day, and try to go out the right way. So if he does come back, I think the opportunity will be there where he can play one more last time in Sanford Stadium.
Where you at this weekend, Shock? I know they've been rearranging all these games this weekend.
Yeah, man. I got to go to Columbia, man, for Vandy and Mizzou. So I'll be in Columbia this weekend.
Lucky you.
I know, right?
Hey, happy Thanggiving, Shock. Thanksgiving, we appreciate my brother. It, man.
All right, fam.
Hey, I appreciate that. Y'all be good, man.
Tell me where you from, Shock. Tell them where you from, Shock.
Southside, what's happening?
There you go. I just want to let them know because, you know, how polite you were to that gentleman. I like, y'all better realize where they were shocked from.
Hey, man, it's all good. My folks took care of it on Twitter, so we all good, baby.
All good, fam.
DJ Shockley there every single Tuesday at 11:20, brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, proud partner of the Georgia Bulldogs, Dow 678 ESOG now.
Coming up next at the top of the hour will be time for a college football roundup. All your news and notes in the world of college football. It's all next. It is the John Chuckler Show live with you here, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and on the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.